Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2015. Lecture 13, delivered on October 7, 2015. The title of this lecture is Stock Valuation.
Today, stock valuation. In the first part of this two-part lecture for Chapter 7 in the textbook, I took you through some of the terminology how to read the screens for stock prices. Now I'm going to take you on another part of the journey, which is actually looking at how you might want to try to calculate stock prices. This is math, but it's not hard math at all, certainly not calculus. But you do have to watch out for a couple of quick little dirty things that happen along the way. And I have shown you these formulas before, and now I'm just bringing it back around and showing you again how you do these calculations. The first formula that I want to show you, remind you of, is the present value of a perpetuity. Now, a perpetuity is a stream of cash flow that goes on forever, or at least practically speaking, forever. After you talk about like 50, 100 years, the present values are so small, you really probably wouldn't want to worry about that. But a perpetuity is a theoretical cash flow that goes on regularly, periodically, forever. And that is actually a great description of a preferred stock. The same dividend will be paid forever, once a year. And at least in a company that's stable, it would be paid forever. And even if we were to say, well, the company's not going to be here in 100 years, you can't tell me that. Well, theoretically, it should be, unless something goes wrong. But even if that's not the case, the cash flows out there would be so small, it would be irrelevant. BLC preferred par value 50 per share with a dividend of 1.5%. That's a perpetuity because forever, every year, the holder of that security will get the same amount of money forever and ever. And it will be 1.5% of the stated par value. In this case, $50, so 1.5% of that would be 75 cents. Is that right? I don't know. Hell, I'm not that good at arithmetic. Let me do that real quick just to make sure. Huh? Okay. I'll take your word for it. So if I'm wrong, you were the one who was wrong, okay? Now, look, the formula for the present value of a perpetuity is nothing but the cash flow, that level, forever, same amount, over the discount rate on the cash flow. In other words, what's the risk of this cash flow measured as an interest rate? Let's say that the appropriate discount rate right now is, let's say 1.4%. In other words, the market says this thing is risky, about as risky as 1.4%. Now notice that in this case, the preferred share is paying a dividend above what the market thinks it should. which means that this security should sell at a premium to its par value. So if we calculate and we get something that's a little above $50, well, that tells us that we probably got it right. So in this case, what we would do in for stock, that is the dividend, the level dividend. Now you got to be careful. The next formula I'll show you, you have to use the dividend one period out, which technically you're supposed to be using here, but since it's the same dividend forever, it doesn't matter. Okay. Oh, what's a mother to do here? I would say, okay, in this case, the dividend is going to be 75 cents divided by 0.014. The price of a share of this stock should be the dividend, 1.5% of par value. Is there some way I can get this to stop turning off? .75 divided by .14. Well, I'll be darned. Wait, .014. $53.57. Probably that's the right answer. A little above. It's selling at a slight premium to par because it's paying a little more than the market says it should be worth. And that's all you do. That's how you find the a price of a preferred share. And actually, to be honest with you, now this is some. I'm going to show you how you can get a handle on what the discount rate the market's looking at is. I'll show you that after the exam. It's a couple of lectures out. But if you got the right about the right discount rate, this is a surprisingly clean formula that will give you prices, and I can compare these to the market for actual preferred shares of companies, and you come pretty darn close to what's showing up in the market. It's not a bad. In other words, it's one of those formulas that doesn't work in it's not one of those formulas that doesn't work in practice. It actually, I've tried it. Sometimes it gets way off. But a lot of times, it's pretty darn close to the right price. But again, you have to have the right discount rate. And we have a method called the capital asset pricing model. It's really not a hard, it's just an arithmetic calculation to get those discount rates. It uses, interestingly enough, beta to get the discount rate that you want to use. And it's actually a pretty simple formula. And it works pretty well, especially for our preferred stock. And so there you are. That's how you get a share of preferred stock. The real play, though, is when you have some kind of stock like common stock. A couple of ways that you can handle it. Now, if you are planning, let's say you're looking for a personal reason. I'm going to buy a stock. I'm going to hold it for, let's say, 3 years, and then I'm going to dump the stock. For 3 years, and then I'm going to dump the stock. And you're going to need to have some kind of an idea of what your dumping price is going to be. Projecting out. Let's say you've got a stock, and this is the stuff we did quite a while back. Let's say CLP common is expected to pay the following dividends. Over the next 3 years. We're going to have your 0, 1, 2, 3. And the dividend, I'm going to teach you a little bit of terminology here. The dividend is going to be 25 cents, 30 cents, and 34 cents. Now, here's where you have to watch it. I'm not going to make this complicated for you. Some professors like to really screw you up. A stock pays a dividend. The dividend is declared by the board of directors. And then there is a dividend date of record. If you hold the stock as of such and such a date, you'll get the dividend. We say that once the dividend is paid, the dividend, it's X dividend. What will happen in real life is that, say that the stock is selling at $100 about. That's its price it wants to be at about. What's going to happen, and let's say that it pays a $2 per share dividend. What's going to happen is that as you approach the X dividend date, the dividend is declared, the stock will actually start to come upward $2 toward the X dividend date. Because if you have the stock on the date of record, you'll get the $2. So as you come closer and closer to that X dividend date, the stock will begin to slip up toward that extra $2 that you get if you bought the stock. And then, the day after the dividend, the record date, it drops back down to to its normal price. And then it'll ride along there, but it's always going to carry a little bit of that extra. And then on the next time that a dividend is declared, it'll slip up toward that dividend, how much it is. And so, in other words, if I bought the stock the day before the dividend, I'd pay $102 because the market's saying you're going to get an extra $2 because you got the stock on the date of record. But as soon as that dividend is paid, boom, it'll go back down. You'll see that nice cyclical wave happen in stocks over and over. It's hidden under the surface of all the noise, but it's there. Yeah. And that's exactly why you're forbidden from selling at certain times as an insider. That's a good point. And let me get back to that. I'm glad you brought that up. And again, all that's happening is the board of directors, and usually there's a regular pattern. On the, October the 30th, the board of directors declares a $2 per share dividend for shareholders of record on December the 31st. So December the 31st is the date of record. Anyone who has a share of stock on or before the December the 31st date gets the dividend. So that's they always make this announcement. It's an announcement you see in the financial news. And as a matter of fact, interestingly enough, normally, it's not the dividend date. It's the same every year. Well, we declare it on this date for shares of record on this date. They try to keep it as a regular pattern. What's the interesting question is, how much are they going to declare the dividend for? That's what we watch it for. Is it going to be the same dividend they declared last year? Is it going to be a little more? Is it going to be less? So, for example, Starbucks, and this is important for a little bit later, Starbucks declared 2-3 years ago a dividend of 75 cents per share. Then, for shareholders of record on a certain date. Okay? Well, last year we were watching, Starbucks declares an 89, I think it was 89 cents. So that it wasn't when what the date of record was, we knew it would be the same. So that was the interesting thing, though, is that they popped the dividend. And then the last dividend they declared, they did the same dates and all that, but it was a $1.10 dividend. So every year, you've got this growth pattern in the dividends, and that's what we're looking for, and that'll be important in just a little bit. Now, back to the point that you were making. There is a law, part of law of securities. It's in the Securities Exchange Act of 1934 that... And there have been a lot of revisions and amendments over the years. Try to hold insiders back from gaming the system. In other words, there are only certain times during the year when an insider can sell some of his or her stock. Those have to be times when there's nothing big that would be expected to be reported. In other words, reporting on a dividend, they would not be able to trade on that information until after it had been made public in an announcement. So the insiders couldn't sell their shares right before the board declared the dividend. They could do it afterwards, because then they'd just be doing what everyone else knew decided to do or not do. And there are other things too, like when the financials are released on the quarter or on the year, you can't trade on that kind of information. Technically, if there's going to be an 8K filing, remember that one, these unusual events, insiders can't get involved in trading if there's going to be an 8K filed. Now, they still do it. There are still ways and loopholes. I wrote an article once just having an absolute cow because the former vice president, Dick Cheney, had uncorked a pile of his stock in a company that he used to be the CEO of. He uncorked it, he sold his stock just a week or so before the company declared some really bad news. The stock price collapsed on the bad news, but Cheney had gotten out of the stock. It was through some holding company and through his wife, I think, but they'd gotten out of the stock like a couple of weeks before the bad news happened. I was screaming bloody murder. This is insider trading. I mean, obviously, but it technically didn't violate the law. And of course, even if it had, any prosecutor who would have tried to prosecute Cheney would have just shot him in the face with a shotgun. So there are ways to sneak around insider trading. But the rule that I've been talking about that restricts when an insider can sell is called Rule 144. Rule 144. And it's a really big thing. And I dealt with it all the time because, you know, I was hired by management and directors of companies to fix things or to do M&As, and I was constantly talking to them about you can't do certain things because of Rule 144. Well, what does that mean? It means that there are only certain windows of time during a year when you can sell your stock, and you can't sell more than a certain amount of your stock. And you can't sell stock if there's going to be some important event that's going to happen. So Rule 144 loomed large in my consulting because a lot of these companies, the insiders were constantly trying to get some way to make a big buck off and then just run away and leave the company to die. At least some of them were. Some of them were really honest. But sometimes they would just trip up accidentally and screw up. So Rule 144 is out there, and it keeps those kinds of things from happening. I'll talk to you more about Rule 144 because some of you might even be involved in that over time. If you get into executive management, part of your compensation package is going to be stock or stock options. And so Rule 144 will affect you someday, quite possibly, in whatever company you work for. If you get into executive level management where stock and stock options are part of your compensation package. Anyway, look. Let's try something right now. Let's say to simplify this, and I wouldn't make it any harder for you than this. Although it's not all that much harder. But let's say that your activity, your purchases and sales, your purchases are right at ex-dividend. In other words, the dividend was just paid and you're buying the stock ex-dividend. And your sale of the stock is right there at the dividend date. Okay, just to make it simple. That way you're not buying the stock here when there's this little premium, dividend premium building into it. Okay, you anticipate selling the stock 3 years out, right at X dividend for $18.25. That's what you plan to do. Now, whether that's going to happen or not, that doesn't matter. It's what your expectation of the future is. You don't know the future. If you do, you shouldn't be here. You should be on the psychic network, psychic hotline network. Okay? So in other words, you're going to buy it ex dividend. There's not going to be any little dividend premium in there. And you're going to, at the end, you're just going to collect your dividend and then sell the thing. What is the most that you would pay, you should pay for this stock? What is the most you should pay for this stock? And that's not hard to answer. It's just old style. This is just old school present values. The price right now that you should expect right now would be the dividend one period out divided by one plus the discount rate on the dividends on the equity, plus the dividend two periods out divided by one plus the return on the equity squared, plus the dividend three periods out divided by one plus the return on the equity to the third power, plus the price three periods out divided by one plus the return on equity to the third power. In other words, this is just calculating discounted cash flows. Now, I want you to get that down. Let it sink in. It's nothing I haven't shown you before. It just looks a little fancier. All I'm doing is I'm saying, all right, what's the present value of those dividends, each one of them? And then what's the present value of that sale price? That's all I'm doing here. That's all I'm doing. Don't panic on this one. Now, you notice that I can actually combine. Do you see how I can combine these last two because they're the same divisor? I want to make sure you see that, right? I can take the D3, which is 34 cents, plus the P3, which is 18.25. I can put those together because I'm dividing them by the same denominator. But before I do that, let me just write it out for you. Dividend, I'm going to take the present value of that first dividend. Oh, wait, I have to have a discount rate. Okay, now, madam, do you remember how I told you I was getting discount rates early in the course? Do you remember that? It was so long ago, I know. Our memories have faded. But still, the romance is there, right, fellow? Do you remember how I did it early in the course? How I got discount rates for cash flows?
I don't.
You don't. Oh, God, how people forget. Do you remember? I pulled them out of my ass. I told you that. God. Let's discount. Let's say that the market's discounting this stock at, let's say, 10%. Okay, discounting 10%. God, I can't believe you forgot. I mean, I'm trying to teach you how to do finance. And you're not listening. You might have had to pull, you might have actually tried to block that out of your mind. The visual probably bothered you a lot. So at 0.25 over 1 plus 0.14, plus the next dividend was, what did I write? 30 cents divided by 0.1 plus 0.14 to the second power. Plus the dividend three periods out, which was 34 cents divided by 1 plus 0.14 to the third power, plus the price. I'm going to sell it right after I get the dividend. I'm going to dump the stock, hoping to get $18.25 for it, divided by 1 plus 0.14 to the third power. In other words, I'm just taking a string of present values of lump sums. That's all I'm doing. Now, and again, instead of doing 4, I could actually just put 0.34 together with 18.25 because they're the same denominator. to save myself a little bit of aggravation, now for God's sake, at least one of you do the calculation too, just so I can know that I've screwed it up. So I'm going to take 0.30 divided by 1.14 plus 0.34. Whoops, clear that. I didn't do that right off the bat. 0.25 divided by 1.14 plus 0.30 divided by 1.14 squared plus 34 cents plus $18.25 is $18.59. Huh? Oh! That's because this is 0.14, not 0.10. You notice how I slid that in there? That way I have to only fix only one thing. I so suck at arithmetic. It's no wonder I've been sued so many times by clients who've lost their shirts with me. No. 18.25 divided by what? 1.14 to the third power. Using 0.14, not 0.10, I get a current price of the stock of $12.77. Now, for God's sake, can someone confirm that or deny it? I'm going to try it again. 0.25 divided by 1.14 plus 0.30 divided by 1.14 squared plus $18.59 divided by 1.14 to the third power. Oh, I didn't read that right. $13 on the, that was actually what I wanted, and I didn't get it the first time. It's almost exactly a $13 stock. Yeah, I set it up before class to get it to work, to clean $13, and then it comes out $12.77, and I thought, something's wrong here. Yeah. Now, that's a quick, dirty way for a limited holding period. But what would happen if we decided that we were not interested in trying to guess the price of the stock out there in the future? What would happen if we treat this as a permanent hold, and all you're going to get forever is the dividend stream? Now, remember, as I told you before, companies can play it a lot of different ways, but the one thing I told companies, don't ever declare a dividend unless you really expect to keep paying a dividend. And also, pay a dividend that is modest enough that you can at least hold that dividend. So in other words, your first year you declare a dividend of 25 cents a share, and then you suddenly have bad times, all right, we'll drop it to 15 cents a share. That's going to make the market really angry, scared. So whenever you start paying a dividend, plan on holding that dividend or growing that dividend. But once you start to grow it, try to hold on a constant growth path. And because that gives the market an assurance, that lowers the risk of future expected cash flows, so the discount rate would be less. Even at that, however, you could still scare the markets. But here's the deal. If you want to try to value a stock straight up as a permanent cash flow of dividends with a constant growth of the dividends, there's a formula for it. The price of the stock right now will be the dividend one period out. Now, that's important. because you'll know the current dividend. You've got to grow it one period. The dividend one period out divided by the discount rate on that stock, on those dividends, minus the growth rate of the dividends. That's how you do it. And I'm going to show you something kind of interesting here in just a minute. D1, that is the current dividend grown one period. You have to use D1. Don't let a problem bluff you. If it says the dividend just paid was, you got to grow that dividend by the growth rate. Now I'm going to show you something interesting here. I hope I can do this. Seriously? Okay. Let me pull something up here. There's some reason why I can't get that to stop. Okay, good. I'm going to turn off the lights, turn down the lights here just for a minute and show you something. I was talking about, well, you want to make sure that you have a dividend. When you give a dividend, that you can hold that dividend. And once you start paying a dividend, you keep the growth rate of it constant. Well, let me show you something here. You know, I turned off so many lights, I can't even see what I'm doing. Did I? I know what it is. It's not SVUX. It's SBUX. B-U-X. I'm going to go to the Edgar filings. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pull the 10K, the most recent 10K. So I've got to sort of filter these results down. Okay, here is the interactive data. I've shown you this before. What I'm looking for is a financial statement that shows me the dividend for the last few years. Statement of equity, cash dividends. There we go. Now, it'd probably take you a little longer to find that than me, but I want you to look at the dividend Starbucks has been paying. Couple of years, 2012, 72 cents. 2013, 89 cents. 2014, $1.10. I want you to do something on your calculator. Now, remember, to get the growth rate, you would take the change in the dividend divided by the original dividend. So, in other words, if the dividend from 2012 to 2013 rose by what? 17 cents? I want you to take 17 cents divided by 72 cents. Yeah, 17 cents. It grew 17 cents. 17 divided by 72. That's a 23.6% dividend increase from 2012 to 2013. Now, I want you to do it for 2013 to 2014. The dividend grew from 89 cents to $1.10. That's 10, 20, 21 cents. So take 21 cents divided by 89 cents. How much did the dividend grow? What do you see? 23.6% constant growth. Starbucks is following a disciplined dividend growth policy. The same amount of growth 2 years over 3 years. Constant growth. Now, some stocks aren't going to do that. What you would have to do is find the growth rates, kind of like an average of growth rates or a trended growth rates for some stocks. But in a company like Starbucks, it's obvious they've got a 23.6% dividend increase target going on. So the question then would come down to, okay, so with Starbucks, I might be able to figure out at least a stab at the current price using this constant growth perpetuity formula. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, Starbucks is a strong company, growing fairly quickly. Let me look at something here real quick. I'm going to check something. in
SBUX.
It's the box. Okay, let's try it. I'm going to take a stab at a discount rate for Starbucks. And again, this one's pulling out of my butt to some extent, but it's a high growth, it's a kind of scary growth stock. And I'm going to pull a discount rate, R sub E, on this of 26%. That's my stab right now, just my guess, okay? So now, what I'm going to have to do to use the formula, I've got a growth rate on the stock. What was that growth rate? 23.6%. About the growth rate of the dividends is 23.6%. Now the dividend that they just paid was $1.10. Now, in order to use the formula, I'm going to have to get D1. In other words, what's it going to be out at the next X dividend? It's going to be out. What's the next one going to be? D1 would be the $1.10 grown one period at the growth rate of the dividends. In other words, I got to grow this one period. What's Starbucks' growth rate of its dividends? It looks like 23.6%. So we'll just try that. Seriously, it went off that fast. Okay, so clear it out. So it looks like Starbucks' next dividend is going to be $1.35. Make sure you understand that. I need the dividend one period out for this formula. The formula uses the dividend one period from now, so I can discount it back the right way. Now, I'll bet you my, by the way, I don't know this, but I will bet you my bottom dollar that Starbucks, when it declares a dividend, it's going to declare a $1.35 dividend. If it doesn't, watch the stock get paddled. If it does not declare, if it's on that growth path, the market's gotten very comfortable with that. By the way, that's at a hellaciously aggressive growth, dividend growth rate. But the market's comfortable with it. If Starbucks comes out and says, dividend will be $1.29, $1.30. I would bet you my bottom dollar the stock market will spank that stock hard. So I am putting my money on the Starbucks declaring a $1.35 dividend. Who knows, though? Anyway, let's do it. Let me take a stab at the price. So the dividend one period out is going to be $1.35 divided by a discount rate of 0.26 minus the growth rate, 0.236. This will probably be a high. I'll bet you this will be too high. The stock price will. I'm probably putting that discount rate. I'm probably being too harsh with this discount rate. I'm just giving it a shot, though. I divided by, open parenthesis, 0.26 minus 0.236, close the parentheses. Yep. Yeah, I'm way too high on that. I'm too high on that. Let me give Starbucks the benefit of the doubt. Let me give them a 20. Let me give them a 24.5 on the discount rate. My sense is that Starbucks is growing fast. It's going to be risky. 26% is a very risky discount rate right now. And I'm probably being overly aggressive with that. But if I do 24, let me do $1.35. divided by 0.245 minus 0.3 minus 0.236 0.245 minus 0.236, close the parenthesis. That puts the price of the stock at $150. Today, Starbucks, son of a dog, I was right the first time. I didn't even look at the price. Well, I'll be a son of a bitch. The price, 26% was a good discount rate. I didn't even look at the price. I called it to 50 on a 26% discount rate. Using 24.5% is giving Starbucks too much credit. It was probably around 26% because that brings the price into line. So if I take this back and use my original 26%, that comes out to be about $50, approximately 50. That was close. That was actually fairly close to the price. The real thing is when I show you how to use a CAPM, which I didn't use here, I was deliberately not using it, you'll be able to get much more finely tuned answers because your discount rates will be much more aligned with the market. But for right now, it looks to me as if Starbucks has a discount rate around 26%, which is still a very, that's a high risk. And it's got it used to be high risk. And a growth rate of 23.6% in the dividend. The next dividend declared should be $1.35. If they declare below $1.35, the stock market will probably shiver a little bit and push the stock price down because of that. $50 a share. If 26% is right, and you see the price at $58, what should you do? Do you know what to do in a situation like this? What should you do? I am pretty sure I actually used the math to get 26% instead of pulling it out of my butt. Okay? And doing that, and knowing darn well that the growth rate is 23.6% on the dividend, I can see that visually from their financial filings. And I calculate out the stock price to be about $50. And right now the market is showing $58.78 on the stock price. What do I do? Do you know what to do in a situation like that?
Well, selling above what your calculated market price is. Yeah.
The market is saying it's $58.78. And I'm figuring 50. Suppose I am so sure of myself that I think I'm right and the market is wrong.
Well, then you should sell because you think
sell it. Yeah. No, I wouldn't sell it. I don't have it. Suppose I don't have it. This comes up with the next thing that I want to bring up to you. People think that stock buying is about buying and selling stocks. There's another thing that happens that you can do with stock. I own no Starbucks. I think that Starbucks is overvalued right now. At $58.78, I think it's $50 stock. But I don't have any Starbucks, so I can't sell it, but I can do something else. I can do what's called a short sell. A short sell is when I borrow stock and at $58.78, and then I sell it, borrow it and sell it at $58.78. Then it falls to $50 like I think it is. Then I buy it back and give it to you. That's called a short sell. That's called short selling. Rather simplistic example of it. Now, I don't know who you are. It's just anyone. All that stock out there, I will borrow. Let's say I borrow 100 shares. I'm borrowing 100 shares, and then what I'll do is I will just wait for that stock, and I will sell it at $58.78. I don't own it, but I'll just sell it. It's naked. It's just naked. I don't own it, but I've borrowed it from you, so I'll sell it at $58.78. Now you're going to say, where's my stock? Where's my stock? Well, I'm going to wait for it to fall to $50, and then I will buy it back. I sold stock I didn't have, so now I got to buy it. But I'm buying it at $50, and then, so I made my money, and then, oh, here's your stock back. Sorry, my bad. Almost forgot about you. That's a short sell. And it happens a lot. Millions and millions of shares every day. In fact, there is a term for how much of this is going on. It's called short interest. Well, I thought I could do short interest. Am I seeing short interest here? I really wish they would be more specific. That's just stock price. Come on. Is there a way that this can't that this doesn't suck? Did I just write hoobel? I did, didn't I? I can't see anything in the dark. I'm getting myself in trouble. I can't see anything in the dark. Probably explains why I've gotten into some of the bad relationships I have. Oh, I'm screwed. No, I'm not calling anyone because I don't want anyone to know what I just did. Because whatever it was I did, I'm going to Firefox. I know Firefox works because the NSA wrote it. Google. G-O-O-G. Good. Now let's look at short interest on the NASDAQ. Let's look at a stock. Well, matter of fact, SBUX. Let's look at Apple. What's Apple's trading symbol? Oops, I did it. Okay. Here's the short interest. Now, when the short interest is falling, that means that there isn't as much speculation of a downstroke. As short interest rises, that means that more people are betting on the stock going down. Short interest is a bet against the stock. That's all it is. Because if I'm borrowing stock, I am betting that it's not going, if I'm borrowing it, I am betting that it's going to fall so that I can sell it at 58 and I don't have to buy it back above 58. I can buy it back below 58 and give it back to you and pocket the difference. So as short interest expands, that tells me that there is negativity on the stock. It's a good measure of negativity. You can still have a stock price going up. Interestingly enough, stock price can still be going up and short interest can be expanding at the same time. All that means is that there's still a lot of bulls in the stock. In other words, optimists about the stock. But the number of bears is also getting stronger. So if you look at Starbucks, SBUX, do you see how the short interest kind of ebbed and flowed, but then it started falling in mid-August? But look now. Short interest is opening up on it. That's a negativity sign. Let me try another one here. Let's try, what's one? What stock? Anything? Let me try MSFT on short interest. Oh, look at that. Spank me Jesus. You see since July... Since the middle of July, short interest has been expanding. Oh, but wait a minute. Let's try another one. Anything else you want to hear about? What's a reputable company? Disney. rut-row something else. What do you see? I've looked at three reputable companies. What do you see? Talk to me. What do you see? They've all got expanding short interest, even though the stock prices are doing okay. That means that what you see is that there's something larger than a single stock. There is an increasing sentiment by the bears that they need to come out of their caves and have a look around. As short interest expands on a cluster of good companies, that's a sign that even though most of the world still thinks that everything is peachy, those old pessimistic bastards, the bears, are starting to come out of the woodwork and saying, we think differently. So as I see the short interest expanding on one stock after another, my sentiment is that there's at least a sector of investors that smell trouble, that smell a sell-off. Does that mean it's going to happen? No, bears can be wrong. I mean, look at that. Bears shit in the woods. That's wrong. But at the same time, it's one of those things that you pay attention to. Short interest, is it expanding across good stocks? If it is, that's a sign that even though stock prices are still doing okay, there is something that is concerning a group of investors. So the bottom line is, suppose that I'm pretty darn sure of that 26% that I got. And I see that my calculation with 26% on that model gives me a $50 per share price. And I see that $58 is the standing price. Well, apparently, I'm not alone because the short interest on Starbucks is increasing. So apparently, other people are doing this calculation, or their computers are, and they're coming to the same conclusion. In other words, short the stock. But others are saying, oh, the stock's fine. Don't worry about it. Matter of fact, let's have a look at it. Let's see what the market thinks of Starbucks recently. Okay, finance. .yahoo.com. Well, why did I do that? Yeah, I know. I screwed it up. So you're going to take me someplace weird. Okay. Yahoo Finance. Come on. Seriously. All I am asking is for it to stop screwing around and give me what I want. Okay, SBUX. 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 So let's look at 1 year. 1 year charts. Well, look at that. Increasing tops. You had a nasty downturn. It broke that choke line right away, that neckline right away. Increasing. Market thinks this stock is doing okay. Interestingly enough, it didn't regain an intermediate high right here, which is a little concerning. But do you see how the market seems to think everything is fine and dandy, hunky-dory? The short interest is a contrary opinion, a judgment with money behind it. So when you have an opinion and there's no money behind it, you're irrelevant. But those short sellers out there, they got serious hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in aggregate betting that the market is wrong. And if 26% really is the discount rate, I'm on their side because I think the stock is overvalued right now. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.